You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by Diana West, one of the great thinkers and commentators about the momentous developments of our time. You can find her writings at dianawest.net and the Daily Caller and elsewhere. She is the author of two best-selling books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, and a wonderful friend and colleague. Thank you, Diana, so much for joining us. Good to have you back.
Oh, wonderful to be back with you, Frank.
I want to say in particular thank you for introducing me to Major Fred Galvin, who I had the opportunity to interview at length yesterday for the program. A remarkable patriot and hero, really, who has suffered greatly for doing his job in the United States Marine Corps, and that penalizing of him and six of his colleagues continues to this day. We spoke in the course of the interview, Diana, about the fact that a number of the people who were involved in defaming him are still active in government service. Many have been promoted in the military into even more senior ranks. This perhaps contributed to the bad choices given President Trump in the course of his review of Afghan policy, leading to a decision to put another 4,000 or so troops on the ground there. I know you have a lot of thoughts about all these issues.
Yes, well, I think the salient point is that the officers, the senior command that have done Fred, Major Galvin, and his fellows such dishonor and unfairness and injustice are the same architects of the policy that led to defeat in Afghanistan over these past 15 years. That is the salient point, because President Trump has chosen to rely on the very architects of defeat to craft a new strategy for the future, going against his own promises to the American people not to do that. I mean, it is my very strong feeling that winning in Afghanistan would involve leaving Afghanistan, because I think that the Taliban and the Americans have very different ideas of victory. Every day we're involved, wasting men, wasting munitions, expending all manner of support and strategy and all kinds of, and treasure and blood and all of that, they win. Every single man we lose, they win. In other words, simply involving us, simply enmeshing us, quagmiring us, all of these things is, in the sense of global jihad, a victory. It's a diversion and it's a waste. So this is something that I don't think our strategists ever consider. So this becomes a conundrum as to why President Trump has chosen this way forward. And it goes back to the insubordination issues as well, because it's not just that he's put his imprimatur on a policy no one would have ever imagined that he would support, namely continued involvement in Afghanistan, but he also is sitting happily, it seems, with cabinet officers, who cabinet secretaries, who are not carrying out his orders. And, of course, this would certainly involve Secretary Mattis most recently.
Yeah, who was also involved in a manner in this Galvin affair. Let me just ask you, Diana, because, I we've got an honest disagreement about this. I think you're right that the attrition of American forces without appreciable benefit is a win for the Taliban. I am concerned that walking away from it would be as well, and consequently have, you know, been intrigued by a middle course that would enable us to have a small footprint there with CIA and contractor personnel in the lead, but maintaining the fight against the Afghan Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other elements. But I think the key point that you're making here, which I really did want to draw you out on further, is another example of this insubordination, it would appear, this real undermining of the president's central campaign pledges and policy prescriptions, has been the essentially the abandoning of the whole concept that what we're up against, whether it's in Afghanistan or whether it's in Iraq or Syria or Iran or elsewhere in the world, is what the president famously called in the campaign radical Islamic terrorism. Seb Gorka, who has now left the building, as they say, pointed out that this was sort of the breaking point for him. There's differences of description of what circumstances he left under, but we hope to talk to him about all that soon. But the key question is, when you see that kind of deviation from the president's policy approach, it does seem to reinforce powerfully your point that that he's simply not getting the support from his subordinates that he's entitled to expect.
Absolutely. And once you eradicate the whole concept of Islamic terrorism or concept of Islam period, in formulating war strategy, you are meshing perfectly, you're dovetailing with the Sino-Islam policies of the Bush and Obama administrations that brought us to this terrible state that these same men, these same command officers, senior officers enacted, formulated, had their careers staked on, and indeed the same gang is involved in the terrible rigors that Major Galvin and the MARSOC 7 have undergone. So it's all part and parcel, the same crew, it's the same deviation from not just policy, Frank. Of course, as we know, we've been banging our heads against this for so many years. It's a deviation from reality. And this is where things become so dangerous when you're actually talking about men's lives, not just the MARSOC 7's lives. You're talking about tens of thousands of lives. You're talking about the entire destiny at this point of American power, certainly. And it's so this becomes deeply alarming, to say the very least. And again, you've got no voice in Congress, with the exception of a few, what we will have to consider to be outliers, whether it's Senator Paul or Representative Jones, who actually put up a hand to say, shouldn't we talk about this, which is about the least, about the very least that a responsible elected official would be saying, but there's no interest.
Let me ask you, Donna, very quickly, one other instance in which it seems the president's policies are being openly subverted, again by General Mattis, is in connection with his policy direction on transgenders in the military. What are we to make of the idea that General Mattis has now announced, well, that actually is going to be up for study now. It's not necessarily going to be implemented.
Yes, well, maybe the question should be directed to President Trump, given that this is his policy. This is now, it went out in a very, very strange way, in the sense that it went out in a tweet, and it needs to be crafted, it needs to be expanded upon. The president should give a speech about this, should make a deal about this. One of the biggest flaws of President Trump's way of being president is he does not explain things to people. He does not actually take the time to ask Stephen Miller to draft a speech about X, Y, or Z. This is certainly one of those points, but the point of power here becomes, will the president take this kind of insubordination from a cabinet secretary? We've seen it rippling across the cabinet, and it really does call into question who is running the show. And at the moment, it does appear to be the generals. And, you start thinking about juntas and coups and all these things, and it's a very disturbing moment. So the ball really is in President Trump's court.
I certainly think so, too. I fear, as I've said before, that he risks, there's a lot of talk about rhinos, Republican in name only, becoming a pino president. Donna West, that's a subject for a further conversation. We will talk with you again in the near future. Thank you so much for your time today. As always, the great work you do. Check it out at dianawest.net, the Daily Caller, and elsewhere. And be well in the meantime.